You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And if it's Friday, it's Brunch with Bernie. Tom Hartman here with you, live from Los Angeles. And Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us for, by the way, in the second hour of our program, Christy Harvey will be with us for the news that might have slid under the radar from the Center for American Progress, our third hour, and most of our second hour, Anything Goes Friday. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Where are you today?
I am in Burlington.
Great.
Got back late last night, and it's great to be back in Vermont.
Great. Well, great to have you with us. What's on your radar screen today?
Well, here, as a member of the Health Education and Labor Committee, we've been dealing with health care all week, so I'm kind of obsessed by the issue and want to just chat a little bit about that. Also, we have been playing a role in trying to understand that at a time when supply for oil is very, very high and demand has gone down over the last many years, why prices are going up. And so those are the issues that are on my mind, the need to develop a health care reform program which does justice to the American people, which provides comprehensive, universal, quality care at a cost that we can afford. And then secondly, to understand why people who are filling up their gas tanks right now as they drive into the service station are paying much higher rates, much higher costs than they should be paying, which I think has a lot to do with speculation.
On the health care thing, two quick questions. One, yesterday we heard that Senator Kerry, in a closed-door meeting that was widely reported, said that perhaps we should have a 10-year trigger. The trigger thing is being revived. We've got a number of Democrats, 10 of them altogether, I guess now. The number went down to 8, and now it's back up to 10, who are waffling in one way or another in public option. I'm curious your take on that. And also, we had a caller a couple of days ago who asked a question that I didn't know the answer to, and that was if the House passes a good bill and the Senate passes a lousy bill, you know, that doesn't have a good single public option in it, it goes to conference committee. It comes back from conference committee reflecting the quality of the House bill. Is that filibusterable in the Senate?
No. To the best of my knowledge, if a conference is it filibuster? Yes, it is filibuster. I mean, anything but what you can do in the Senate is you can slow down the place in a dozen different ways. You can prevent action from taking place. I think that we need 50 votes to pass, as I recall, a conference report. But they can wreak havoc and mischief in terms of getting that vote to take place. There are things that you can do, for example, even before the conference committee, after the bills are done, by essentially filibustering the name of the conferees. You can prevent conferees from being appointed. If you have a mind to prevent something from happening and you are in the minority, as the Republicans are now, and you are playing the role of no, 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 trying to stop virtually anything. I'll just give you one example of that happened to me this week. We introduced an amendment as part of a tourism bill, a rather non-controversial bill to encourage more tourism into the United States. And our bill said that we wanted the Commodities Futures Trading Commission to use their emergency powers to go after excessive speculation on oil futures, which we believe is the key reason that the price of oil and gasoline are soaring in America. And the Republicans basically essentially filibustered and refused to allow that whole bill to come to the floor because they didn't like my amendment. So what you can do when you're in a position, which the Republicans are really in right now, of trying to stop anything from happening, I think you're going to need 60 votes to move things along. But getting back to your other question, here's where we are. Number one, if we are looking at a way that we can provide quality, comprehensive, universal care to our people, in my view, the only solution to the problem is a single-payer solution. I say that not from an ideological point of view, but from an economic point of view. Right now in the system, you have 1,300 private health insurance companies, and I think Most of your listeners know that the function of a private health insurance company is not to provide health care. It's to make as much money as they can. And in fact, every dollar of health care that is denied to a patient is a dollar more that they make. So they have created a real Byzantine, complicated system which wastes, the estimate is, between $350 and $400 billion every single year.
Right.
So unless you get a handle on that, you're not going to have the money to provide comprehensive health care to all people. Number two, what we announced this week, we had as a member of the health committee just the other day, we were talking about examples of the incredible waste and fraud that is based on the for-profit system. And we mentioned, for example, that at Duke University, which has a very good medical center, as a matter of fact, but Dr. Uwe Reinhardt, who is a trustee there at the hospital, he mentioned that at Duke, he testified in Congress a while back, they have 900 billing clerks to deal with hundreds of distinct managed care contracts, and that is one billing clerk for each of the hospital's 900 beds.
Hmm.
Can you imagine that?
That's a disaster.
I mean, it's just totally insane. And then when you look further at the system that we currently have, if you look at, you know, the fact that we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs, one of the reasons is you have the head of Johnson & Johnson, who, by the way, laid off workers in 2007. They paid their CEO, Bill Weldon, $31 million in compensation. Ron Williams, who's head of Aetna Insurance, got $38 million. The guy who's head of Cigna in a five-year period made off with $120 million. You see, you got, you know, very excessive salaries. But one of the things that we focused on is an issue that has not gotten a whole lot of attention, and that is the enormous degree, Tom, of fraud and dishonesty within the for-profit healthcare industry, whether it's the insurance companies, whether it's the for-profit hospitals, or whether it's the drug companies.
We had yesterday on the program Bernie Wendell Potter, who for 15 years was the VP of corporate communications for Cigna, and before that with Humana.
And he testified, I think, this week in Congress, didn't he?
Yes, yeah. And he told the horrible story. He said whenever any kind of substantial claim, particularly cancer, he said that one definitely will trigger it, they pull all your records to go back and see if you might have filled in a form wrong at any point so that they can deny you care, number one. And number two, he said what caused him to turn around, why he just couldn't look himself in the mirror anymore, was he was in Virginia and visiting his family, and there was a group from South America that provides free medical care to tribal people in remote South American villages that had come to rural Virginia to provide free medical care.
Yep.
He went down there and looked at it, and here were these people standing in the rain for free medical care in animal stalls being provided by these Doctors Without Borders. And then a week later, he's on a private corporate jet, a Cigna corporate jet, eating off gold-plated china with gold-plated silverware, being fed a five-course meal by the flight attendant. And looking around, and he said, it suddenly occurred to him, all of this was paid for by the people who have health insurance policies or whose policies were turned, or whose coverage was turned down. And he just said, you know, I just couldn't do it. I can't do it anymore.
Well, that's
an amazing story.
It is an amazing story, and I read a little bit of his testimony before Congress, and what he was talking about is a process they call rescission, I guess, where there was one person, I think, testified at the same hearing. She said that some years before, she had neglected, I think, to mention that she had treatment for acne
as a teenager, she had had acne.
And they used that as a reason to deny her coverage for breast cancer, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
But, I mean, but what this fellow is saying, and he deserves a lot of credit, and unfortunately there aren't more people of conscience in that industry, what he is saying, as everybody knows to be true, is that every dollar that they can keep from paying out is a dollar more that they can make and pay out in CEO salaries or, you know, other ways that benefit the people, dividends, the people who own the company or the top executives of the company. But above and beyond all of that, which everybody understands to be true, then you have things like just simple outright fraud. You have Warner Lambert, which is a division of Pfizer, a major, major drug company, pled guilty in 2004 and paid $430 million to settle charges that it fraudulently promoted, you know, a particular drug. You have GlaxoSmithKline, who signed a corporate integrity agreement and paid $88 million in fines for overcharging Medicaid. You got Hoffman LaRoche in 1999, paid $500 million in criminal fines for a worldwide conspiracy to raise prices on vitamins. You have Sanofi Aventis, 2009, paying $95 million to sell drugs. In other words, systemic fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
systemic, not accidental, not one time. Systemic fraud among the drug companies, the insurance companies, and major hospitals.
Right. These companies should be put out of business or at the very least broken up. I'm telling you. Bernie Sanders is with us. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website. He's got a great newsletter over there. Check it out. We'll be right back with your calls for Bernie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, what a week. Ed McMahon, Farrah Fawcett, Michael Jackson. All be missed. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us and taking your calls. 866-987-THOM is our telephone number. By the way, our live, free live web stream available over at TomHartman.com. Free, the video stream is not up because I'm not in town today, but the web stream certainly is. Bernie, ready for some calls?
Let's do it.
All righty here. Let's see here. Mitchell in New Jersey. Hey, Mitchell, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. Senator, I wanted to ask you about the public option. I was Russ Feingold, one of your colleagues this week, said that a health care reform without a public option would be health care in name only. And if I'm understanding your comments correctly at the beginning of the show, it sounds like any type of method that would circumvent a filibuster like reconciliation is probably not going to work. So are you basically telling us that, you know, that the public option or any kind of single payer is dead? And if it is, what are we likely to be seeing?
Okay, that's a good question, Mitchell. And let's distinguish between a single payer and a public option. They're very different concepts. Single payer basically does away with for-profit insurance companies. And makes the payment for healthcare based on tax revenue, like we do educational, like you do police or fire protection or the defense department for that matter, and provides the same quality comprehensive care to every man, woman, and child. That's what a single payer system is. To my mind, it is the most cost-effective way to provide the kind of healthcare that the American people need. That is, I have legislation, I've introduced legislation to do that. We're going to bring it up on the floor of the Senate when the bill hits the floor. We will probably get 10 or 15 votes for that. So the opposition to that from the insurance companies and the drug companies is extraordinary. We don't have the political support to do it. In terms of a public option, that's something very, very different. What that says is that if we provide what they call an exchange or gateway, where people have the choice of a number of private insurance companies all over the country, one of the choices should be a public system, in my view, similar to Medicare, except the Medicare for people who are not necessarily senior citizens, for all people. According to a recent poll in the New York Times, some 72% of the American people wanted that option. The argument for that is that a public option based on the same benefit package that a private plan would have would probably be cheaper because of the savings in administration, CEO compensation, not paying dividends, and also people for a thousand very good reasons do not trust private insurance companies, and they would like to have that option. So that's what the debate is about right now. Now where we are is the House of Representatives will pass a bill with a strong public option. In the Senate, there are two committees dealing with this issue. The committee I'm on, the Health Committee. The other committee is the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee is a very conservative committee. Senator Baucus is the chair, who has insisted on trying to create a quote-unquote bipartisan bill. And you do not have one Republican in the United States Senate who believes in a strong public plan. So by definition, if you want to bring in a number of Republicans, there is not going to be a public option in the plan. So you're going to see two committee reports coming out, one in the House, in the Health Committee that I'm on, the Health Education Committee, with a strong public plan. We're working on the details, not yet finished, but there will be a strong public plan. The one from the Finance Committee will not have a strong plan. Then the two committees are going to be merging their work, and we see what happens. But I tell you, in terms of the public plan, despite overwhelming support on the part of the American people, I'm afraid we will see what happens. But at this point, it is going to be quite a struggle in the Senate to have that plan. And I think Russ Feingold is exactly right. You're not really talking about health care reform unless you have that. That's the minimum. I mean, the debate really should be on single payer. But we don't have the votes or the support to do that. But not to have a strong public plan to give people the option of going outside of the private health insurance company is, to my mind, literally beyond comprehension.
Bernie, to that point, very quickly, I'm curious what you're hearing about the support of the president for a strong public plan. We've heard very conflicting signals on this, and whether you would be opposed to any legislation if it doesn't have that.
It's too early to say what I would be opposed to or not be opposed to, because we haven't seen anything yet, to be frank. The president has stated, ran for president on talking consistently about the need for a strong public plan. He's reiterated that. His problem is that he is dealing with the chairman of the Finance Committee, who is a conservative, who is working with Republicans. So that's Max Baucus, and Obama has that political problem. But I would say, Tom, that the American people have got to rally and say that at a time when we have 59 Democrats in the Senate, and hopefully Al Franken will be joining us soon, the issue should be to demand that at least all of those people vote to stop any filibuster, so that we can, in fact, have, at the very least, a strong public plan in any health care reform package.
There you go. We'll be back with more calls for Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Anything Goes Friday, 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. Our website, tomhartman.com. His, sanders.senate.gov, 866-987-TOM. Our telephone number, Barry in Fort Worth, Texas. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Tom. Good morning, Senator Sanders. Seemed like to me the very people that this bill, this health care bill, can help, it's the very people that's against it, seemed like. Like the Republicans, everybody can benefit from this. I got a guy that I know, he's got to cut his time down from making money so he can get on a county type of health insurance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So my wife, she had to go back to work from being sick because she couldn't afford insurance. I couldn't afford insurance. I got insurance through my employer. It's what, $50-$60 every month. If I'd have added her on, it would have went up to $700.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you're absolutely right, Barry. And
thank you, Barry.
The issue that Barry is raising is just a whole other issue. Is you got literally millions and millions of people in this country, Tom, who work at jobs today not because they necessarily want to be there. They're working at those jobs because they have decent health insurance. And that is not a smart thing or a fair thing to individuals or for the economy as a whole. And that is what happens when you don't guarantee health care to all people as a right, but you tie it to employer-based health care. And then you can have two people living on the same street. One works for an employer that provides good health insurance. One works for an employer that has no health insurance. And their lives are radically different. Why? Because they have simply working at different jobs. Does that make any sense? So, I think Barry raises, very important issue, not unrelated to the fact that, this year we're estimating that about 1 million Americans will go bankrupt because of medical-related costs. So this is just a huge economic issue. You have small businesses in Vermont all over this country who are putting far more money into healthcare than they should, and they don't have enough money to invest in their own business to create new jobs. I mean, the bottom line is you have a dysfunctional healthcare system, and the direction, in my view, that we've got to go is simply say, hey, if you're an American, you're entitled to healthcare. How do we do it in the most cost-effective way? And certainly, again, to my view, what you don't want to have is predators in the middle of this system between the people who are providing health care and the people who need health care, whose function in life is to make billions and billions of dollars off it in a dozen different ways.
Right. Exactly. Don in Boston, Massachusetts. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Senator, and hey, Tom. Three quick questions. I'd like to know if any of your fellow senators have ever gone without health insurance, have ever tried to make a $1,400 COBRA payment on $40,000 a year, and have they ever heard the words claim denied? Those 10 senators that you're talking about that could eventually hold this thing up, what pressure are we putting on them? You know, states like Missouri, they get almost $2 for every federal tax dollar that they submit. I mean, are we putting any real pressure on these people, and how long is it before we have to take draconian measures and cancel our health insurance to force real change? Thanks.
Well, you know, asking the simple question, what the hell do we have to do to join the rest of the world and have a rational health care system? I think in terms of what members of Congress received on, in fact, not all that great a health care package. It is, we are part of the same federal employees benefit situation, so we get the same, I get the same package as my, you know, people who work for me get, as postal workers get, as anybody who works for the federal government. So you have a wide choice of different options, and you choose them based on what the needs of your family are, but, you know, they're not particularly good. I used to say that when I entered Congress, the janitor at City Hall in Burlington, where I was mayor, had a better package than we do in Congress. But the bottom line is, you know, members of Congress make a good living. No, they all have health insurance for their families and themselves. I think what ends up happening is the power of money, and everybody should understand that the pharmaceutical industry, the insurance companies, the medical equipment suppliers, people who make billions off of the healthcare system, just enormously powerful. And a culture is developed in Washington through lobbying and campaign contributions where people look at the world in a certain way. And certain concepts are just off the table. The idea that you would say to the private insurance industry, sorry, your day has come, you have failed, we don't need you anymore. For many members, it's just not comprehensible. It's like, you know, talking to their best friend and kicking them out the door. You just don't do those things. Drug companies who supply, drug companies have thousands of lobbyists, thousands, well-paid lobbyists, former leaders of the Republican Democratic Party. We end up paying the highest price in the world for prescription drug. Massive fraud involved in the drug industry, but nobody says, let's see, sorry guys, you can't keep ripping us off anymore. So I would get back, this is a political issue, and I would say where we are right now, is people said we are sick and tired of the Bush administration, which was certainly the most reactionary that we have had in our lifetimes. Obama is 1,000 times better. But here's the issue we have to deal with. There are 59, and we think Al Franken will be joining us, 60 Democrats. It should be that every single one of those Democrats is going to vote for what we call cloture. That means to end the filibuster. Now, some of these guys end up not wanting to vote for the legislation. Let them do that. But we should, when we see situations where Max Baucus is busy negotiating with Republicans, that should not be the case. The Democrats have the votes. They should take responsibility for passing a strong piece of legislation, and the American people should address that issue.
Yeah, indeed. David in St. Paul, Minnesota, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hey, great to talk to you, Tom, and thanks, Senator Sanders. I have a question about, you know, the Iraqi war, the Iraq war, and the troop withdrawal that's going to occur. How come no one's talking about withdrawing the contractors out of Iraq? It doesn't make sense to me that we're going to force the military out of there, but we're increasing our contractors, and the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, the people these contractors are hiring, they're not who are these people accountable? They're foreign nationals. They're not U.S. citizens. They're not even U.S. citizens fighting for, you know, the democracy. It's a profit making. So I would like to know why there hasn't been a bill to stop contractors before we pull the troops out as well. Thanks.
Well,
Senator.
There's been, thank you. Again, you touch on private contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan. We could expand what you're saying to talk about the privatization of government programs right here in the United States of America. We've had, in my state, very serious problems where workers have been ripped off in the northern part of our state, in St. Albans area, because that those functions, in this case dealing with immigration, were privatized a number of years ago. I was at a hearing last week dealing with workmen's compensation in Iraq, where people who work for private contractors were wounded on the job, while private companies like AIG made unbelievable profits administering the workman's comp program. They delayed and hesitated and fought paying the money that they owed to these guys who, you know, were hurt on the job. So I am not a great fan of privatization, and I think that over a period of time you can make the case that the most cost-effective way of providing the services that the government requires are to have competent people who take their jobs seriously, see it as a career, and long-term they will provide you the best service in the most cost-effective way.
Rich in Sublimity, Oregon, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. We're having a rally on the Capitol steps in Salem, Oregon at 10 a.m. tomorrow, and we're mandating single payer, as in H.R. 676, that actually was reintroduced in February this year. Why shouldn't we say to the people in Washington, you don't tell us what is or is not on the table. We tell you.
Well, Rich, I think that's what democracy is about. And I would hope also you express support for the bill that I've introduced in the Senate, along with Conyers' bill in the House. I think the way progress takes place, and we've learned this from history, we've learned this from the trade union movement, we've learned it from the civil rights movement, we've learned it from the women's movement, we've learned it from the environmental movement, now we've got to look at it from a healthcare movement, which I believe, by the way, is the civil rights struggle of today. It is going to be grassroots activism, which makes, gives Washington an offer that they can't refuse. And that is, if we do not go forward with a single-payer national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people, people who vote against that do it at their own risk. But that is an issue that state by state people are going to have to organize around, and I'm glad you're doing it in Oregon.
Bernie, we have just 30 seconds before we have to take this commercial break. Not enough time to bring in a caller. You said people need to organize around it. Any organizations or groups? I know Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, is doing good work on that.
Physicians for a National Healthcare Program, which...
Right, PNHP.org.
Right, and the people, Dave Himmelstein, Steffi Woolhandler, many others. We have had them in Washington. They're doing a great job, and they're saying that as doctors, they're sick and tired of all of the red tape and the bureaucracy. They want to be able to practice the medicine that they were trained to do.
Right. So you can get over to their website at PNHP.
Very, very good website. Yeah.
Right. PNHP.org and support them. See what they're organizing, how you can help out there. And, of course, Sanders.Senate.gov. Bernie's got all this information on his website, too. Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Back with your calls right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Tom Hartman here with you of our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us taking your calls on pretty much anything you want, although healthcare seems to be the topic du jour. Jean in Fort Worth, Texas, another listener to our live 50,000-watt blowtorch station down there in Dallas. Hey, John, you're on with Senator
Bernie
Sanders.
You got it, 1360.
Yeah, there you go, AM 1360, and we're pleased to be on it.
Well, Senator, I want to tell you, you are one of the truly great patriots in Congress. And one of the few, I think, that represent their constituents.
Thank you very much, John.
I wanted to talk about the single-payer system just a minute, even though it looks like it may not be an issue. I've been in the healthcare industry myself for 20 years, and I've designed health plans for small and medium-sized corporations, and they just don't work. They're very inefficient. They're hard to understand. And it's about 60% of the medical bills today are already being paid by the government. I mean, it's all paid by the taxpayers. Eventually, the taxpayer pays all of it. So now you've got 40% of the medical bills being divvied out by the private sector through an extremely inefficient means. And I think if you look at the cost savings that would be passed on, it's passed on to the taxpayer. That's eventually where it stops. And all the corporations, the private corporations that are paying all these extremely high medical bills, those are just passed on in the cost of their products to the consumers.
John, you're absolutely right. I agree with you. And I, you know, I think the starting point of this whole should be to ask why we end up paying twice as much as countries like France, which by and large provide better quality care than we do. That should be the starting point. But everything that you're saying is absolutely right. And we have a dysfunctional, incredibly wasteful, incredibly complicated system. We've got to simplify it, and in the process we can save hundreds of billions of dollars.
Ed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey guys, this is Ed from Pittsburgh. Great, great show. Listen to you all the time. I don't understand this. The question the right or the anti single payer people have when they say about, you know, finding the money. I mean, my gosh, why don't we just repeal the Bush tax cuts? I mean,
well, Reagan tax cuts.
See, here's the point, Ed.
Well, hang on. I mean, Tom says let's go back to the Reagan tax cuts, and I agree. But the point is, we're spending billions and billions of money in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, the Bush tax cuts, the Reagan tax cuts. I mean, guys, it's a matter of priorities, isn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's even more than that. The truth is you don't have to spend more money on health care in this country. We're spending $2.7 trillion. The average American is now spending close to $8,000 a person. We don't need more money in the health care system. What a single payer is about is not asking for more money. A single payer system is doing away with many, many hundreds of billions of dollars in waste, which goes to companies that have all kinds of people, billing and administration and bureaucracy and profiteering. You don't need any more money. We're spending, as I said earlier, almost twice as much as any other country on earth. And in many cases, the outcomes, the healthcare outcomes of countries like France in terms of infant mortality, life expectancy, preventable deaths are better than ours. So the question is simply getting the waste out of the system, rearranging the financing, but at the end of the day, you don't have to spend more than you're spending right now to provide comprehensive quality health care to every American.
Mike in Santa Barbara, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, I was just wondering if you guys could put a list, you know, together between you and Mr. Sanders and the Democrats that are opposing the public option, and put it, you know, put a link front and center on your website so people can contact those.
Well, let me tell you this, Tom. That's something you could do. I would not feel comfortable.
We have a list like
website,
that,
but that's something you certainly can do. And I think
you
have enough public information to know what's what.
Yeah, we have a list. It's from day before yesterday's show blog on our homepage at TomHartmann.com. People can find that list. And apparently, Senator Bingaman of New Mexico has flipped and come out in favor of a public plan. He was a public option. He was originally on the list as well. But then there's some folks who are saying that they are, but they're really not, apparently, like Maria Cantwell, which is just confusing to everybody. Don in Delaware, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. The Senate Finance Committee is proposing to triple the federal excise tax on alcohol, on beer that's 4.5% or above in alcohol. What this is going to do is affect the small craft breweries. You have 10 in Vermont, and if you go down to Magic Hat in South Burlington, you can ask them about this bill. This is not going to affect Budweiser, Coors, the big guys. These breweries they have up to 50 people working for them, yep. and this excise tax can put these guys out of business.
Okay.
And we could use your help.
Okay, you got it. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Let's see here. Mark in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, guys. Between the health care debate, which is long overdue, and Michael Jackson, we seem to have forgotten about the corporate crime crisis. And having spent $12 trillion, you know, trying to pick up the mess, and one of the things that we need to talk about is the Financial Reform Act by President Obama. And Senator Wellstone in 2002 had tried to introduce the Consumer and Shareholder Protection Association Act. And I have long been hoping that somebody would be able to reintroduce that piece of legislation, and if Senator Sanders could take a look at it.
Bernie, we have a half a minute left, by the way.
Well, Paul Wolf, my view, one of the great senators of our time, and we will take a look at it. That's the – let me have that title again.
I'm sorry. I'm
the Consumers – all right, we can get it. 2002. Okay.
It was pretty sweeping consumer protection legislation, as I recall.
But that was
what you'd expect from Paul Wellstone.
Absolutely. And we will certainly take a look at that. We have been very active in this whole Wall Street disaster, and we'll continue to be.
Great. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. Get over there, share your stories with him, sign up for his newsletter. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Coming up next, Christy Harvey from the Center for American Progress. Are the high seas sharks threatened with extinction? And more. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to our second hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Christy Harvey on the line with us. You know, when the news is flying under the radar, the Center for American Progress is out there scooping it up. And Christy Harvey, the Director of Strategic Communications at the Center for American Progress, the editor of Mike Check Radio, AmericanProgress.org, MikeCheckRadio.org. Christy, greetings.
Hello, and I have to apologize. I got hit with a whopper of a chest cold, once I hit the East Coast. I'm in Washington, D.C. right now, and I'm not quite up to my radio voice standards, I have to say.
Oh, you sound
It's really unfair because most women, when they get sick, they get that really cool, sexy voice like Demi Moore. And I turn into Harvey Fierstein.
I think it sounds good.
It's just all unfortunate.
All right. So let's just go through some of the news that fell through the cracks here today. Daniel Choi, what's going on?
Yeah, I wanted to just make sure everyone was alerted to this. I know you've been following this pretty carefully, but Daniel Choi.
He's been on the show, in fact.
Exactly. I remember. He is the guy, he's the lieutenant in the National Guard who speaks Arabic. He's a West Point graduate. He's an Iraq War vet. He was dismissed from his post from the National Guard under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I knew that he had a hearing coming up at some point to talk about this. It's the big defense board hearing about this. That's coming up on Tuesday. In Syracuse, New York. So I wanted to make sure everyone knew that that was on. This isn't the end-all, be-all. This is the first investigatory hearing he's going to have in front of the military. So it's kind of a big deal.
But this is a heads-up without a call to action. There's nothing we can do about this, right?
Exactly. It's just, you know, the only thing people can do is what they continue to do is, you know, sign petitions and petition the White House to repeal this horrible policy and petition their own congressman or congresswoman about this policy. But this is just a heads up that this battle is going to heat up, but it's early next week,
right.
And so that's easy for some people to sometimes miss.
Michael Jackson's family is alleging that he was killed with an overdose of Demerol, that he had a live-in doc who was giving him injections of it every day, that he took an injection an hour before he died, and this doc has apparently vanished. In fact, they towed his car away last night from Neverland.
Right.
Any updates on that, or is that pretty much where it stands?
I think that's where it stands right now. I've tried to watch, but so much of the news coverage is being portrayed as breaking news, but then it's really just, you know, concert footage from 1982 Thriller.
Right.
So it's been hard, I think, to sort of dig through all of the wall-to-wall coverage of this tragedy to get some actual news clips out of it. So that's the last bit, unfortunately, I had also heard.
This is interesting. We did an hour a couple of days ago on this show on, you know, should people chemically enhance themselves to be more
right.
functional? You know, things like Ritalin for mental function or I don't know, hormones or whatever, you know, Suzanne Somers. And, you know, it's a very contentious topic. And apparently Michael Jackson was enhancing his performance, apparently with painkillers. I don't know that he had, you know, any specific injury, but the story will come out. We'll find out.
Well, and also he was 50 years old and about to embark on a world tour for his, you know, to raise a little money. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I'm exhausted just from doing my regular job, and I'm nowhere near 50 at this point. I just can't imagine. So I'd heard that he was trying to give himself a little bit more youth and energy. Hmm. So I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah, well, shooting Demerol is not the way to do it. But
probably not. No.
Yep. Anyway, the House cap and trade, the so-called Clean Energy and Security Act, that is the cap and trade act, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And you know, there are many of us out here, many progressives who are very ambivalent about this because about 85% of the carbon credits are going to be given away, which the Europeans tell us was the mistake that they made early on, was giving away the carbon credits. All of them should have been sold. Industry here in the United States says, oh, no, you can't do that. That's a carbon tax. And then, you know, people like James Hansen say, yes, that's the point.
Right.
So here's this piece of legislation that is kind of falls into the category, in my opinion, of, well, it's better than nothing. But it might even not even be better than nothing if it means that nothing else happens. And I'm curious your take on it and also, you know, what's going to happen.
Well, I honestly think I do fall in the it's better than nothing. I think, you know, we are dangerously close to letting the perfect be the enemy of the good with this. And I do think there is enough support that I think that we need to pass something to get momentum for more. And I do think that if we at least get something passed, it will break the watershed and we'll be able to get more and better legislation passed instead of having this be the end-all be-all, because everyone knows it's not. Everyone knows that this is not going far enough. But it would, you know, reduce emissions to 17% below 2005 levels by 2010 using the cap-and-trade system. And there's supposed to be a big vote today. So I've been trying to keep an eye out for when that will go down. Last I heard, Nancy Pelosi is still trying to get together some votes for the legislation. It is very controversial. So that's something to keep an eye on coming out of the Hill today.
Here's another thing that boggles my mind or baffles me, and some maybe not baffles because I have a feeling that I know why this is, but the Defense Department has said we don't want any more of these F-22 jets.
Yeah.
The Pentagon says we don't need them. The military plan, all, you know, right up and down the line of command, everybody in the military says, no, we don't need these things. And Congress is about to buy a whole bunch of them and give them to the Pentagon for hundreds of billions of dollars. And Barack Obama says, hey, wait a minute. You know, the Secretary Gates says we don't need these. The Joint Chiefs says we don't. Not only we don't need them, we don't even want them, because then we got to maintain them and train and everything else. They're you know, the wrong thing at the wrong time for the wrong war, and yet Congress is going to push this through.
They're pushing it through still, and this is why, and this is how the system actually works. This is such a fascinating case study, because the F-22 fighter jet, which was created to fight Soviet MiGs, like Top Gun type warfare in the 80s Cold War, is all but useless in current combat situations. But this fighter jet has parts made in 44 different states. So every time the military comes forward and says, don't make any more, we want to take this money and use it for better other stuff, there are 44 different states worth of senators and congressmen that can then come forward and fight for it. And that's exactly what happened here. We were talking to Barney Frank the other day, and, you know, he sometimes has a good zinger or two. And he said, you know, this fight over whether or not to fund this jet is the only time the F-22 will ever see combat, which I thought was pretty funny. Because it's a boondoggle. And they say that it's going to make people lose jobs. But in all honesty, what it will do is people who will no longer be building these F-22s, they'll probably go on and help to build some of the other planes airplanes and the other weaponry that the Pentagon needs and wants. It's not like we're going to end this and the Pentagon's going to say, oops, no more jets, no more weapons. There's always going to be a hunger at the Pentagon for more, just not this one, and it's a huge waste of money.
And it's emblematic of the triumph of lobbying and power in Washington, D.C.
It absolutely is.
You know, it's just incredible. The mayor of El Paso, a funny joke, ha-ha.
Ha-ha, really funny guy, yeah. El Paso Mayor John Cook was trying to make a joke and said, and I'm quoting him, please, I'm quoting him. He said, quote, I never mind going to a lynching as long as I'm the guy holding the rope and not wearing it. And he right now is quite confused. He cannot figure out why people are up in arms. He said this was meant just as a funny joke and aside, and people are quite angry, as you can well imagine.
Amazing. Now, also, there's been a study out about how basically the Bush wars are hurting our military families.
Yeah, and I really
the children.
I wanted to talk to you because you and I have talked about this, Tom, sort of in the abstract, but this is a study that really just sums up what you and I have discussed before. And the Pentagon did this sweeping study of military families, and they found out that one out of every four military children has honestly had serious problems coping with one or both parents being abroad and fighting in these wars. And a third of all military children have actually seen a drop in their grades or serious problems with behavior since their father or mother has been deployed. And the problem is twofold. One, the military, as we've seen before, doesn't always do a great job in fixing some of the non-visual scars that people carry from these wars. We've had problems with PTSD and things like that, and there has been not enough done to help the kids of military families. And two, it shows even when we start to bring men and women home from Iraq and then Afghanistan, the problems and the wounds that we see from those battles will still be ongoing for a generation, at least.
Yeah, a terrible and tragic thing. And finally, Michelle Bachmann. She's gone nuts again.
Michelle Bachmann. You know, she's really replaced Ann Coulter's spot in my heart, in that one little cold, weird place that you just want to say, oh, my goodness. She has this strange, and I don't quite get it, but she has this strange vendetta right now against the census count.
Right.
And I just think of all the things you could be upset about, the census is the last. But her new one is that the census can be used to do things like the Japanese internment. So that's why she's not going to participate.
Yeah.
Japanese
Amazing.
Internment.
She's afraid of being interned. Maybe
exactly.
She should be. I don't know. Christy Harvey, the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. Thanks, Christy.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Great talking with you. Coming up next is embattled South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford announced plans to star in a steamy telenovela for the Spanish language Telemundo.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Ladies and gentlemen, regarding my bizarre disappearance over the last several days, I was not, as my staff said, hiking alone on the Appalachian Trail, but instead in Argentina, cheating on my wife and...
It won't be easy, you'll think it's strange, when I try to explain how I feel, that I still need your votes after all that I've done. You won't believe me. All you will see is the governor you knew. And now I've been caught in the lies, and the sanctity of my marriage is through. But don't cry for me, right-wing media. The truth is I lied just for you. My infidelity, my disappearance, I broke my promise, don't keep your distance.
Mark Sanford. Yeah, well, and this from the wire services, as we say, embattled South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford resigned effective immediately today, but announced plans to star in a steamy telenovela for the Spanish language Telemundo TV network. A telenovela tentatively titled El Gobernador Caliente follows, quote, the hot sexcapades of a globe-trotting governor who doesn't let state business interfere with his relentless pursuit of Cono, according to the Telemundo press release. Mr. Sanford said he is buckling down to learn his lines, learning such Spanish phrases as tan líneas, tan lines, and boobies. At least someone else writes the script for me, Mr. Sanford said. Some spelling has never been my forte. And just as an FYI, this is interesting. You hear this voice in the background? This... That is Maria, whatever her name is, Maria Belen-Shapur, who is Mark Sanford's paramour. So you can see a whole video of her over at Huffington Post. How funny. Or not. I don't know. Whatever. How interesting. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. It's Anything Goes Friday. Any topic you want to talk about. Oh, also, I wanted to let you know, in addition to being live on 50,000 Watt Station in Dallas, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, in 2 weeks, more or less, I think it's July 6th. I'd have to go back and look at the email, but it's right around then. Our Phoenix affiliate is coming back on the air, and we will be live again in Phoenix on KPHX. And so I know we've got a lot of folks listening to the web stream since the Phoenix station went down a while ago, and they are coming back with a vengeance. And they've got a great lineup. Our show will be live on there, and a lot of other great shows on as well. So check it out. For those of you who are in Phoenix, be sure to note that. El Cerrito, Craig. What's up, Craig?
Hi, Tom. I think we need to remind people that what we have right now is, in my opinion, predatory corporate health care with corporate lawyers between you and your doctor.
Right.
Personally, I'd rather have a human between me and my doctor. But... you know, this is the thing. We need to match the conservatives or Republicans with the sexy talk and the, you know, we need to remind people, and the message, we need to remind people that these are corporate healthcare companies. And these, you know, these are the same kind of people that brought us Enron and WorldCom and you know, the rest of this stuff. Their only obligation, and they're proud to tell you, is to make money for their stockholders.
Yeah, no, and this is the biggest problem, Craig, and you're absolutely right. We need something more than for-profit healthcare. Healthcare should be considered part of the commons. It is just that simple. Kim in San Francisco. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Tom. Hey, regarding the whole single-payer issue or having the public option, in addition to, of course, calling the politicians, which you guys, it just has to, they're counting on us leavening off and not calling as much.
Right.
Please just put it in your schedule every day. But
yep.
In addition to that, there are the democratic institutions like your local Democratic Party or like a labor council that have forged these big, solid relationships with some of the Democrats like Max Baucus who are voting against us. So in addition to talking to the politics, let's talk to our local organizations and say, can you consider perhaps looking into or letting Max know that we are looking into an alternate candidate besides him, because they're also very invested in the candidates. It has to be a grassroots on all different levels. If we're going to win or if we're going to get anything close to what we want, we have to realize that even our local institutions, our Democratic parties, our city, our county Democratic parties, are invested in these politicians that may not be working for us.
And we have to take them over. And when those politicians come back into town, the first people they talk with are the people who are the volunteers and who have run for, you know, like county chair, that kind of thing.
Right.
But are the people who show up at the party meetings. That's
right.
The first people that they listen to. Kim well said, thank you so much for the call and thanks for listening. And to that point, for example, this Sunday, I will be in Nevada. I'll be in Reno. We're on the air there in Reno. And I'll be there keynoting the Washoe County Democratic Party Jefferson Jackson brunch. So for our Nevada listeners, our Reno listeners, if you want to be part of the solution, go to washodems.org and sign up. Pick up your ticket for that gig. And look forward to seeing you on Sunday. I mean, this is how you do it. This is how we all do it. Kim is so right. We participate.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Don't you ever come around here. Don't want to see your face. You better disappear. The fire's in their eyes. Their works are really clear. So beat it.
Friday. Tom Hartman here with you, 866-987-THOM, our telephone number if you want to drop into our live chat room. TomHartman.com will get you there. There's also our live audio stream, our free live audio stream over at TomHartman.com, our free community that you can join where you can post your own blog, you can put up pictures, you can say hi to folks. We've got free message boards, all of it right there, all kinds of cool stuff. Plus, of course, you know, podcasts and things. 866-987-TOM, our telephone number. Joe in Northampton, Mass. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just started raining here, but I'm so wildly thrilled to talk to you. You're a great hero of mine.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening to WHMP there.
Oh, sure. Listen, here's the deal. I'm a lifetime artist. Spent most of my life in Oregon, actually, in Ashland. Mm-hmm. And so I've lived at the lower end of the middle class. And I'm lucky that I'm in a union, but I have to work 24 weeks a year or I lose my union health coverage. Mm-hmm. Now, every time I hear this argument, and I've heard people sort of dance around it, Ed got close the other night. The conservative argument is they're going to raise your taxes. And I just thought, I mean, you know, for somebody who's making, say, $30,000 a year, lower end of middle class, they're paying maybe $7,000, $8,000 in taxes. Am I close in that?
You mean in total health care expense one way or the other, either through premiums or through taxes?
No. If somebody's making $30,000 a year, they're paying taxes over and above health care of about $7,000 or $8,000, right?
Oh, yeah, probably. I don't, you know, yeah.
Well, it just seems to me that the health care that those of us who are not given health care through a union job is extremely high. All of my family members are paying, you know, $1,000 to $1,500 a month for health care.
Yeah.
So if we add that up, don't we come up with an insane figure for what we're paying for health care now?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, this is what I went through yesterday, where I listed the OECD countries, you know, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which is basically the top 30. Well, it's not even the top 30 countries. It includes Mexico and Turkey and whatnot. But they're all countries that have single-payer health care systems or variations on them, and all but one of them. And the average cost in the OECD countries on per capita, in other words, you take the total health care expenditures in the nation and you divide it by the total population, average cost in the OECD countries is in the $3,000 range, $3,200, $3,300 per year. In the United States, it's in the $7,000 range. And yet they, on average, live a year longer than we do. Their average lifespan is 78 and change. Ours is 77 and change. They have lower infant mortality. In other words, they have more babies that survive. They have better outcomes from medical procedures. They have healthier lifespans. Just the whole thing. Every major indicator, they're doing better and they're spending half as much. Why? Why are we spending twice as much? It's not because we've got fancy machines that are so expensive. It's not because our drugs are wonderful and they're so expensive. First of all, the exact same drugs are available all over the world at a fifth of the price. The reason why is because we've got health insurance companies and to a large extent a pharmaceutical industry that are behaving like leeches on the back of the American consumer. The American citizens. We should not even think of ourselves as consumers in this context,
right,
but as citizens. So if we had, and Joe, thank you for the call, if we had a single-payer health care system where we simply said, okay, we're going to pay for this out of tax dollars, we're going to pay for it out of the federal budget, just like we pay for education, just like we pay for fire. We're going to pay for it that way, and then, you know, everybody has access to it. You know, at the end of the day, what you would find out is that there would be, you know, not that big a difference. I mean, in fact, actually, we would be saving a substantial amount of money. It could be an extraordinary and wonderful thing. There's Harm, by the way, HAARM, has this really, really, really cool video. Inside the offices of Americans, Healthy Americans for Reforming Medicine, Harm. And it's just a little skit where a woman, this is inside a right-wing think tank, and I think I can perhaps play this thing out of my computer. Here we go. Apparently I can't. I'll tell you, I'll play it after the next caller. We'll let the thing buffer for a while. YouTube is not running as fast as it should. Bob in Seattle. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hi, I just got a letter from my insurance company yesterday, from Regents.
Mm-hmm.
They're raising my rates 40% starting in August.
Jeez. Is it anything you did, or is that just what they're doing?
Well, I turned 60 in February, so that might be part of it. But, you know, if I went back through the history, they've raised it in the last 2 years, 71%. Since September 02, 368% my rates have gone up.
Incredible. Incredible. I mean,
we got a problem here.
Yeah. I would say that we do. We absolutely do. Todd in Dallas, thanks for the call. Todd in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Todd, what's up?
Yeah, my question is all those that oppose the public health care plan or that the government paying for it, we pay for police protection, we pay for fire protection, we pay for a military to protect us. Why not health care to protect us in the same form that you're talking about?
Right. That's my point. I mean, why are we saying that our houses are more valuable than our bodies? That we will all collectively pay for fire protection? Oh, yeah, for sure. We're going to pay for the fire department. You know, no doubt about it. But we're not going to pay an excellent point, Todd. Thank you for the call. But we're not going to pay to take care of our bodies. You know, again, let me see if I can play this. This is this harm video, and tell me if the Jacob, let me know if the audio is coming through okay on this.
Americans
thing.
Who don't have health care. I heard they don't even want health care.
I heard that too.
This is this right wing.
Yes, Lindsay, what is it?
I hate to interrupt, but my foot is on fire.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, what are we gonna do?
I think we need to call the fire department.
Lindsay, what did we say about tax-funded programs? She's adorable, isn't she?
She's new. It's okay.
Not to worry. I'll just call the private.
Yeah, he'll just call the private fire department, and then it goes downhill from there as the private fire department guy shows up, as Lindsay's foot is on fire, and the private fire department guy says, was this a pre-existing condition? And then goes through this whole thing of, your coverage does not cover your foot being on fire, only your leg. And so once it gets to your leg, we can cover it. And all this time, her foot is on fire, and it's just the funniest video. If you just go over to YouTube and just look for HAARM. .org. Actually, probably harma.org. It's on their website. It is outrageously good. Diana in Texas. Hey, Diana.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Are you there?
I am, and you're on the air. What's up?
Oh, great. Well, I usually agree with everything you say, but I disagree with you on peak oil.
Okay.
And I just believe Saudi Arabia still has plenty of oil.
They do.
Okay.
Peak oil doesn't mean we're out. Peak oil means that we've hit the 50% point.
Yeah, I don't think we have, okay? And it doesn't matter if we have, because in Texas, if you're down here, they're drilling for gas everywhere. And as you said, the BRIC countries started the gas cartel, and they didn't invite us.
Yep.
So gas is gone. Oil is the new gas.
Yep.
It doesn't. And I thought the reason for the Iraq war was because Saddam Hussein was trying to put his oil on the market, and everybody knew it, and they had to stop him, or he was messing with the price of oil.
Yeah, it may well be, Diana. It may be that I'm wrong. I frankly don't think so. I'm looking.
Consider it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the science from the oil scientists who are saying that if you and you can pretty easily track this stuff down, that over the last 6 or 8 years there has been, although there have been a lot of discoveries, particularly off the coast of Brazil, for example, a lot more discoveries of oil, that the amount of oil being discovered is starting to fall off in the way that it did in the United States in 74 when we hit peak oil in the United States, and that in all probability we're going to look back at 2008, 2009 as the years that the world hit peak oil. But that doesn't mean that we're out of oil. It means that it's just at half. What it means is it's going to start getting expensive. But,
well,
you know,
I think that's the reason they're using, that's the excuse they're using, but oil is dead. I mean, it's soon going to be dead, and gas will be the new oil.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit cleaner,
and
they can push that off on us for a few centuries.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And T. Boone Pickens is out there pushing it like crazy because he's got a whole lot of gas wells down there in Texas.
Absolutely.
That he owns.
Absolutely.
And
that's why, passed the law.
Yeah, and that's why he wants everybody using gas to power their cars, but as in natural gas. But the fact of the matter is that this is another way of pumping carbon out of the ground and into the atmosphere and heating up our atmosphere, and it's just a disaster. Diana, thanks for the call. Anything goes Friday. Jerry in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, hi. Last night I was watching on YouTube the debates, you know, the presidential debates, because I didn't see them when they aired because I didn't have a TV.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, there was this grumpy old man on the stage named Mike Gravel.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mike's been on our show a couple times. He is a grumpy old man.
He was a former
senator from Alaska.
Right. Okay. I didn't know that. But anyway, he would point to the other candidates, and they called on him like it was a 3-hour debate. They called on him like twice, and I looked in the back, and the thing was sponsored by YouTube and CNN. YouTube is owned by Google, which is like this multi-billion-dollar interest. And anyway, every time they called in Gravel, and he pointed to the others, and he said, "If you want to know what these guys are going to do, don't listen to what they're saying now. Go online and find out where their money is. Find out who is paying for these people."
Yep.
Anyway,
you can do it at opensecrets.org, by the way. You know, and it's easy to do, Jerry. You go to opensecrets.org, click on Congress or members of Congress, type in their names, and it gives you the top 10 industries that donate to them, the PACs that donate to them, the individual donors that donate. It's all right there. And it's just really mind-boggling. There's one breakout, Business versus Labor, that is just fascinating. You can check out your favorite politician.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
That's why I'm starting with me. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways. And no message to the man any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make a change.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I am going to make one final effort here to make this thing happen, and I think that I can do it by simply putting my mic, if I can get it right up here. This is just such a hoot.
Want health care.
I heard that too.
Sir?
Yes, Lindsay, what is it?
I hate to interrupt, but my foot is on fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, what are we going to do?
I think we need to call the fire department.
Lindsay, what did we say about tax-funded programs? She's adorable, isn't she?
She's new. It's okay.
Not to worry. I'll just call the private fire department.
I already gave him a call when I saw the smoke, so.
Did someone call about a foot fire?
Ask him.
Fireman walks in.
Oh, that's a nasty fire.
Can you put it out now?
Whoa, not so quick, young lady. She's adorable, isn't she?
I just said that. Didn't I just say that?
He just said that. He's so funny.
First, I'm going to have to see your fire care insurance card.
But I don't have fire care.
Oh, well, that's not good. These young people today, they don't think it can happen to them.
I said that earlier, too.
Yeah, you did just say that.
It burns!
Little lady, you do understand that fire care is a privilege, not a right? I mean, we can't have fire care for all Americans. I mean, where did the money come from?
It's getting bigger.
One thing you can do until we get this whole thing sorted out is think of someplace cold, like a snow-covered hill or Superman's Fortress of Solitude. Did you see that movie?
Both of them.
What?
You know what? Lindsay has fire coverage as our employee.
Of course she does.
Oh, great. Okay, now we're talking. Is this a pre-existing condition?
You mean was I born on fire?
Yeah. Or have you had some smoldering in the toe region over the past few months?
No, it just happened.
Okay, I'm looking at your coverage, and unfortunately it doesn't cover foot fires. It does, however, cover upper thigh fires. So once that fire makes its way to your upper thighs, you'll have the best coverage around.
I can't wait any longer.
Well, you can pay out of pocket.
Fine, how much?
$2,500.
I've got $195.
Well, that'll get you a part of a procedure. You know, tide you over until you can afford more.
And he pulls out a little tiny squirt gun, and he's squirting his little...
Isn't it going to be cold in that Fortress of Solitude with all the ice?
And these guys are just having this conversation while he's squirting her foot ineffectively with a squirt gun, and it's not quite putting out the fire. And, I mean, that's really... It says find out more at haarm.org. You can go over and check out the website. But this is just... I mean, it is so incredibly true. So... Anyhow, it's, let's see, Michael in Seal Beach, California. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I basically want to talk about what's going on in the economy right now because I think that it's what's going on is you have two political parties that really don't care about the average American, and you have corporations that are moving offshore that are getting tax credits for deindustrializing the United States. And I have noticed in the past 20 or 30 years what I've read up is that the only thing that we seem to make here anymore are defense-related defense-related industries, or
right. And even a lot of that is the guts are made overseas.
Yeah, exactly. And what's also happened is you have automobile manufacturers like Mercedes-Benz, Nissan, and Toyota that are probably competing with what used to be the big three, and are employing almost just as many Americans as the big three. I don't know how I'm stating that.
Right, but they're employing them at $9, $10, $12, $14 an hour, and they're in non-union states. And again, they're bringing in the more sophisticated, the more expensive parts of those cars. They're bringing them in from Southeast Asia, and then they assemble them here.
Yeah, and I think what's going on right now is I'm kind of a history buff, and I think that the United States is basically going down the same road as ancient Rome, and I'll state the reasons why. It's because Rome basically tried to conquer all that Middle East area, what is Iraq today, Iran, yep. Saudi Arabia, and they tried to manage that, and they tried to manage their economy at home, and they had a criminal justice system that was in disarray, capital punishment going wild, and I mean, not exactly the same with the United States.
They had a kleptocracy, ultimately.
And I think what we have is an oligarchy here, and the oligarchy is, and I'm finding there's very little difference in the political parties. You have a candidate, everybody from Walter Mondale to John Kerry, who says, we're going to stop the companies from moving overseas. We care about the Americans. We care about the middle class, and it just doesn't seem to matter. I remember this when I was 14 years old, from 1984 to 2004. That's 20 years. And it seems like it's getting worse and worse and worse. I know that you're an optimist, but I'm a pessimist. And I think that the United States in the next 20 to 40 years, when I'm an old man, this is going to be a nightmarish place. I hope the progressives can turn this around and can do something to call their member of Congress, call the Senate.
Well, that's the thing, Michael, we are. And I get your pessimism. I had an interesting conversation over dinner last night with Ed Asner about this exact same topic. You know, how do you look, you know, what is the future of America? Ed and Cindy, wonderful people. I think all of us are like cautious or hopeful, or many of us are cautious and hopeful optimists. The downside, the bummer is it's probably going to take things getting a lot worse before there's enough pressure for them to get better. And when things get worse, I mean, keep in mind, World War II helped, or not World War II, the Great Depression, the Republican Great Depression of the 30s, helped bring about Franklin Roosevelt and all those progressive reforms. It also helped bring about Franco in Spain, Mussolini in Italy, and Hitler in Germany. So it's like you can go either way. And that's why it's so important that we be active, we be involved, and we be out there to help, you know, move it in the right direction. Glenn in Taos, New Mexico. Glenn, got about a minute here before we got to wrap up this hour and move on to the next one. What's up?
Well, the conservatives, they want to conserve, all right. They want to conserve their predatory insurance. At whose expense? At my expense. How will we pay for the universal health care, they whine? If my taxes go up half as much as my premiums go down, I'll take that deal.
Yeah.
And I think most other Americans will, too. In fact, they do.
Yep. And they do. That's in every other country around the world, and even the conservative governments. And this was something that I thought was really, and thank you, Glenn, for that. One of the most interesting parts of when we did our show from Denmark for a week last summer was when we had several politicians, including the Danish equivalent of the vice president, on, and who identified themselves as, a couple of them identified themselves as the conservative politicians. And we would say to the Danish conservatives, do you want to do away with national health care? Oh, heavens no! We'd never do away with a national health care program. Are you kidding? Coming up next, we need a Darwin Award for this one. Did this thief try selling a stolen mower to his owner? Oh, my. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you, 866-987-TOM, our telephone number, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop by, drop into our free live chat room, listen to our free live web stream, register on our free live message board, our free community, all kinds of cool stuff. And normally when I'm in Los Angeles today, and a tip of the hat and many thanks to all the folks at KTalk for providing me with a studio for the day. And typically when I'm in Portland, we also have free live video stream, although right now it would just be an empty chair, so I doubt it's running. But in any case, 866-987-THOM is our telephone number. And John in Dallas, Texas, listening to our 50,000-watt station there. Hey, John, what's up?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Well, I think 12 years of Bushes have just about gutted our economy.
I don't disagree. Actually, I would say if you really want to know where it started in the last year of the Carter administration with the election of Maggie Thatcher, and the many of the Democrats actually even started adopting this. But Jimmy Carter deregulated the airline industry and the trucking industry, and then Ronald Reagan was elected, and he took it, you know, amped it up another 30 decibels, and then Bill Clinton amped it up with NAFTA and GATT and WTO and the Telecommunications Act and just blew the doors out. And then George W. Bush, of course, let all his cronies and buddies in with the war and everything else. And between those circumstances, and I'm not blaming Jimmy Carter for what he did, frankly. I think his intentions were good. But Reagan certainly, you know, from Reagan forward, we've seen the rape of America, the economic rape of this country.
Well, I don't know. This might be a little harsh, but the last Bush, I put in the same category as Milosevic, de Klerk, and Stalin. That's really, you know, how I feel.
I wouldn't disagree. I would say that the guy is a war criminal. And oddly enough, he could be hearing us talk right now because our affiliate in Dallas throws a signal right over his house. John, thanks for the call. It's that's an interesting one. Yeah, I think that the Bush administration officials, particularly now that this document is out, and this is big news in the UK, none of the corporate media in America is talking about it. The fact that the documents have been released showing that George Bush was intending to go to war with Iraq even after he and Tony Blair were quite certain, based on the information that they had, that there was that the country of Iraq represented absolutely no threat to us at all, that they had no weapons of mass destruction. He was still ready to go to war. He was still ready to lie us into a war. And that, in my opinion, is just absolutely reprehensible. Alan in Los Angeles. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yes, I think that the basic problem with corporations can be led to the situation of CEOs making their money based on the increase in stock prices, period.
Yep.
And I feel that there should be since corporations have certain fiduciary responsibilities, one of them to make money for their shareholders, but it should, in addition, have the responsibility to make sure that their employees are making enough so that, for instance, the CEO should be limited to, say, 10 times the mean salary. So, yes, they can make as much as they want as long as their company is doing well and they're paying everybody. Their compensation.
Or do like civil service, make it 20 times the lowest salary. But
yeah.
The problem that you identify, though, Alan, there was a brilliant article about this in Harper's about a year ago. The overall, the cover story was three ways to fix the economy, and this is one of the three. And the author pointed out that during the Reagan administration, the rules were changed on how distribution of stock options to executives are taxed at the corporate level. And so what happened was that corporate executives started getting massive quantities of their compensation, not as pay, because any pay over $1 million is not tax deductible to the corporation, but rather as stock options, which are tax deductible, and that this was a horrible mistake because what it did was it caused the executives to start behaving in a way as if they were stockholders, and the rationale for this was, hey, you want them to behaving in the stockholders' interest. Well, stockholders' interest is short term, and so instead of thinking about how do we build this company over the long term, how do we make this company profitable, how do we build this company solid, how do we be, you know, have our roots in the community, all that kind of stuff. Instead, all of their focus was on what's the stock price going to be next week? What's the stock price going to be next quarter? What's the stock price going to be in 12 months when my stock option vests or rolls over or is available to be sold and I can bail out? And what it has done is it has created a corporate culture. And Alan, thanks for the call. Well said. It has created a corporate culture that we never saw before in America. And this all, again, goes back to the 8 years of the Reagan administration, that we never saw before in America. Used to be, before Reagan, the average CEO had worked more than 30 years at the company for which he was the CEO. In fact, as I recall, it might have even been 40 years, but definitely more than 30 years. The average CEO worked their way up in the company. They were steeped in the company's culture. They were part of the company, and they retired from the company. Now the average CEO in the United States has been at the company that they are the CEOs of fewer than 10 years. And if my memory serves me right, it's been a while since I read the article. It was more like in the neighborhood of 5 or 6 years. And there's no loyalty to these companies. The loyalty is to the stock price. And when some other corporation offers them a better stock price, off they go. Catherine in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Hey, I'm just thinking of Michael Jackson today. And
yeah, it's a loss of a great talent.
Oh, and you know what? One of the songs, and I was looking on YouTube, because, you know, he went through so much, and boy, do you miss him when he's gone. Mm-hmm. And he did a song back in 2006 for Earth Day called Earth Song. Mm-hmm. And it is a message to the world, and it just, I mean, hit that and the man in the mirror. You know, he gave a lot. He entertained a lot, but he had a lot of good messages.
And he also gave away a lot. At one point in his life, when he was not experiencing financial problems, he had 30 major charities going. He was a major donor to AIDS charities, both in the United States and Africa. He was a major donor to poverty programs and children's programs. In many ways, Michael Jackson, you know, setting aside, you know, whatever you may think of the legal problems that he had, in many ways, I think he was a good model, and so, at least for how to be a philanthropist, and certainly how to be, you know, one of the world's most brilliant performers. Thank you, Catherine, for bringing him up. And let us not also forget Farrah Fawcett. Farrah Fawcett, who of course from Charlie's Angels, the iconic poster of the 1970s made her the most famous. But she starred in a movie that was directed by Robert Greenwald, who is one of the most brilliant filmmakers ever, and is doing some just incredible stuff now with Brave New Films over at bravenewfilms.com. And Robert Greenwald directed this movie called The Burning Bed, if my recollection is correct, about violence against women. And Farrah Fawcett is another one of those people, and you know, let us not forget her. And then, of course, Ed McMahon died a couple days ago. It's like, phew, boy, the times are changing. I don't know how to say it beyond that. Harvey in Berkeley, California. Hey, Harvey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'd like to talk about plug-in vehicles today.
Yes, sir.
If you go to Google, put in Google, and you put in the words plug-in, plug-in, the next word vehicle, vehicle, and the word tracker, tracker, plug-in vehicle tracker. It shows all the new plug-in vehicles that are coming, and it shows pictures of them, including all the motorcycles and three-wheelers, and including buses and trucks and all the cars. There's Mercedes-Benz coming out. There's Rolls-Royces plug-ins. Everything is coming out plug-in, and you can see pictures of it. It tells the time it's coming out, and it shows you what's happening. So we need to do this because we have to save our oil. We use oil for medical purposes, for farming, for plastics. It's a real commodity in our world now. Almost everything is made of plastics, and to just burn it into the air and gives us cancer. Proposition 65 here in California says petroleum and their use gives us cancer. So just to use it like that is burning into the air is a waste. We're ruining the planet. So I say go to plug-in vehicle tracker and see what's coming, and it's all
okay. So, Harvey Goodwin, thank you. I know this is a passion of yours. You called in before about it. I agree. I share your passion. If we do not get, and I did a minor rant on this yesterday, and it bears just briefly repeating, that if we do not start using something other than fossil fuels to power our cars, because transportation, you know, about 90% of the oil that we imported to the United States, or 90% of our total oil consumption, about 60% of it is imported, is for vehicles, is for transportation. And if we could get our transportation system off oil, then we're no longer addicted to oil. We would be, you know, we domestically produce 40% of our oil. We can continue to do that, and that'll be more than enough oil. Coming up next, really, this time, we need a Darwin Award for this one. Did this thief try selling a stolen mower to its real owner? I wonder what happened next. That and your calls, of course, on Anything Goes Friday, right here on the Tom Hartman Program. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls in just a moment at 866-987-TOM. But first, well, you know, you would think that a hearse with a casket in it would be something that the police wouldn't notice. And maybe a fine way to smuggle 100 pounds of pot around town. As William Dale Croc of Cave City, Arkansas was trying to do. The problem was when he backed the hearse up to the known dope house and they went out and shoveled the pot into the coffin as the police were watching. It didn't work out all that well, so what can you say? 866-987-TOM, our telephone number. And Peggy in Sierra Vista, Arizona. Hey, Peggy, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Good to talk to you. First-time caller. I'm on Daily Kos, and they have a person who refers to themselves as ex-neocon, has a diary. We can't afford universal fire protection.
Right. Right. And I think that that video that I played, the audio.
Video is there, yeah. Yeah, it is, yeah. And yeah. One of the comments is that they are channeling you.
yeah, and I'm channeling them now.
And I love the chart, their the Republican alternative plan.
Yeah, tell me what it – I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me.
Well, it's got hoses and squirt guns for extinguishing, not socialism, fire protection for all means currently covered folks, barbecue and fireworks.
Right. Right. There you go. We don't need no stinking fire departments. It's a socialist thing, you know? We need
exactly,
to have private fire departments.
That's exactly the analogy I've been using when, you know, people, you know, complain about socialized medicine. Well, don't you really like your socialized fire protection?
And aren't our bodies
police
more
protection?
Important than our houses? I mean, if my house burns down, God forbid, assuming that I make it out, I'm still around. If my body burns down, I'm gone. For 230 years in the United States, we've all agreed that we need to protect each other's houses through this socialist system called fire departments, and we haven't gotten around to saying, oh, by the way, we've got another house. It's the skin that we live in, and it's our bodies. Peggy, thank you very much. Well said. Excellent point. Zeph in North Hollywood, California. Hey, Zeph, what's up?
Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Zeph. How about you?
Love that answer. Listen, I've got a rant on healthcare, but I just want to remind you that you asked a question 2 days ago about what is Tony Blair getting out of all of this cooperation with George W. Bush, et cetera.
Yeah.
In Michael Moore's, one of his documentaries, his earliest one, he says that Tony Blair was given a directorship in the Carlyle Group. I would say that's reward enough. I mean, that was in Michael Moore's documentary, if I remember correctly.
How to create a family dynasty without really trying.
Sure. Now, I'd like to remind everybody that 15 years ago, Hillary Clinton tried to tell us everything that we're hearing today. But all the 30-something-year-olds were 16 years old, so they don't remember it. But I want to remind everybody that the Clintons had this great battle against all the enemies that are back on the scene again, and they're saying the same thing. And I'd like to hear all the so-called liberal talk show hosts like Randy and Stephanie Miller and you and Chris Matthews, who have ragged on Hillary and the Clintons all this time and being calling yourself so-called liberals and not supporting the fairness doctrine is unforgivable. Because if you're truly liberal and you truly protect the commons, then the American airwaves need protection. And you just want to be another Rush Limbaugh.
Okay, got it. I got it, Zeph. I got it. Thank you. Yeah, point made, and I'll just leave it at that. Greg in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, I was calling to touch on a point on your conversation yesterday, and I tried to get in yesterday but didn't. It has to do with what seems to be an 800-pound gorilla in the room with respect to healthcare reform, and that is individual people's responsibility. We spend 17% of GDP on healthcare, actually treating disease. And if you go to the CDC's website, you look at the chronic disease program, about 50% of that is going to treat ostensibly preventable disease.
Right. Things and like I diabetes, think, like type 2 diabetes, for example.
Type 2 diabetes and
heart disease.
Obesity and all of those things. And certainly people need help. Those are not easy problems. But the American, it needs to, I don't know, needs to be patriotic. It needs to be the right thing to do.
Let me blow the frame up. Greg, if I may, let me blow the frame out a little larger. And rather than saying individual Americans need to be more responsible for their health care, which I don't think anybody will disagree with, we need to figure out why it is that all of a sudden in the last 25 years we've seen this explosion of obesity that is extending down to three-year-olds who are not making bad decisions. And I'm telling you, it is a change in our food supply. It's a change, you know, Food Inc., the movie, watch it. It is a change in our food supply, and in my humble opinion, it has to do with high fructose corn syrup and the subsidies to the corn industry, which again have to do with, you know, a certain segment of agribiz spiffing a whole bunch of members of Congress in big ways that are really, really destructive. And there, I mean, again, you know, look at the largest picture possible. You say, well, okay, we've got a healthcare problem, a crisis in the United States. Part of the crisis is that there's all these preventable diseases. Why don't we prevent the diseases? Do we need what? Better clinics to prevent the diseases? Do we need, you know, do we need to have people, you know, out there walking for a half hour every day to prevent the disease? Perhaps the best way to prevent the disease is find out what's causing them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
There's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. A place much brighter than tomorrow. And if you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry. There's a place you feel there's no hurt or sorrow. There are
Michael Jackson, Farrah Fawcett, 34 minutes past the hour, and this is downright strange. This falls into the category of, I can't believe you just can't do that at home, right? The California man, 45-year-old Stephen Murdoch of Tustin, California, was arrested early Tuesday after a security guard spotted him in a workout room that was supposed to be closed and locked in a gym complex. What was he doing? Well, he was wearing a miniskirt, fishnet stockings, and heels, hiding behind exercise equipment and watching porn on a laptop. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Maybe I led a sheltered life. I don't know. 866-987-TOM, our telephone number. Jerry in L.A. Hey, Jerry, what's up? Thanks for waiting so long, by the way.
Hey, Tom. I would like to say that this healthcare debate presents all of the listeners with an opportunity to debate the need for media reform in this country. And to put it nicely, it has a lot of similarities with the healthcare reform need.
Yeah, it really does.
I apologize, sir, for I don't have the kill button on you. You have it on me. But I'd like to say that the control of our media and control of this debate on healthcare reform is primarily by those in the private sector who own the media. They're just like those in the private sector who own the healthcare providing and the healthcare paying. And as such, it goes against not just the right to health, but the right to a complete view of the facts, such as what we didn't get when we heard that lopsided discussion of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Sure. No, I'm completely in agreement with you. And let me assert, and I am going to exercise my kill button here, Jerry. Thank you. You made your point, and thank you very much for making it. I absolutely agree that when we have a situation where seven corporations control the vast majority of healthcare in this country, the seven big insurance companies, that's too big. When we got a situation where you got five corporations, arguably six corporations, that control about 80% of all the newspapers, magazines, radio, and television stations in this country, that's too big. It's time to use the Sherman Antitrust Act and break these things up. And not just that. I mean, you know, industry after industry after industry. Ever since in 1982, Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Act and its many children, its many heirs over the years, because the Sherman Act was passed back in 1881. Ever since Reagan stopped enforcing that, what we have seen is a consolidation in this country that has led to a degradation right across the board in the quality of products that we have, in the quality of manufacture that we have, in the quality of news that we have, in the quality of discourse that we have, in the quality of health care we have, right absolutely across the board. And to say that you know, we need to solve this problem by carefully monitoring what people are saying, for example, on radio or television, and telling them, no, you can't say that, you have to say this, that's putting a Band-Aid on a cancer. The real cancer is that we've got these gigantic corporations that are in many cases involved in the defense industry and other very, very large industries that are running. And I remember back when Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act, and the next year CBS said, okay, we're doing away with the firewall between our news department and our sales department, and between our news department and our entertainment division. In fact, the news division is now under the vice president of entertainment. And that was when it all really began to go to hell. And it's just been continuing ever since. Sylvia in Portland. Hey, Sylvia. Sylvia?
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I want to tell you how much I appreciate being able to get through to you, because you're the only person I've been able to get through to. I am trying to call and reach my representatives and senators and the White House to support single payer and a public option. I don't have a computer. I can only do this through the telephone. My son, I have good health coverage. I'm a retiree, but my son has an autoimmune disease, which is a precondition. And it's very difficult. He is on, he does have health insurance, but any chance of that going up any higher would knock him out of the ability to do this. And in his case, because he has this autoimmune disease, it's very, very dangerous. I have tried to reach the White House. There is a number I call, and a code comes up all the time. I can't get through. I tried to reach Ron Wyden. I'm here from Portland. I can't. It's always busy. Jeff Merkley, always busy. I can't get through to Earl Blumenauer.
Gets it. Have you been calling their Washington, D.C. offices or their local offices?
That's the problem. That's the problem. All my information that I got through the library and everything were these Washington, D.C. numbers. And I really am calling also to please get some help to have local numbers.
Look in your phone book. Do you have a phone book, Sylvia?
Yes, I do.
Okay. In the phone book, there's a section of government phone numbers, and you will find Ron Wyden's local office, his local Portland office in there. Jeff Merkley's, you know, probably it's too new to be in there, but as I said, you don't even have to call Jeff Merkley. He's in favor of single payer. He's one of the really good guys in the Senate. I mean, there's nothing wrong with calling him and saying thank you. Earl Blumenauer definitely is in the phone book, because he's been there. You know, he's been our congressman, one of our congressmen from the Portland area for a long, long time. So it's right there in the phone book, the local.
Now, what about
number.
David Wu, Cantwell, Alondro,
yep.
Conrad? Well, what about them?
Well, David Wu also should be in the Portland telephone directory, because
okay.
He represents part of Portland. He's a member of Congress House of Representatives from Oregon. Maria Cantwell is the senator from Washington State. So
okay. You
may, if you're depending on the phone book you have, some of them, because Portland is right up on the Washington State border and Vancouver's right over the Vancouver, Washington is right over
right.
the river, and some phone books have Vancouver numbers as well, and I believe that Senator Cantwell has a Vancouver office, and
okay.
and if not, you may well find her phone number. So I would start there. If you don't have access to a computer and you can't easily get it, that's mm-hmm. where I would start. And Sylvia, I wish you well, and thanks so much for doing it. And here's the good news. Excuse me. Using your telephone is actually one of the most effective ways to communicate your message to these people, as opposed to sending emails. So it's a good thing
that
you're doing.
I knew that, because I can't do the emails. Now, what about Conrad and Alondro? What about them?
I'm sorry, who and Alondro?
Kent Conrad and Mary Alondro.
Yeah. For that, you know, you need a computer, and you go to callcongress.org, and you get the toll-free numbers for Washington, D.C.
Oh, say, so call Congress.
Callcongress.org is a website that we have. It just points to a page on my website that's got a bunch of toll-free numbers.
Okay.
And the next time you go to the library, go to, type in callcongress.org and just write down those toll-free numbers, take them home with you, put them on the refrigerator, and you can call any member of Congress with those numbers because it gets you to the Capitol Hill switchboard, and then you just say, I'd like to talk to Kent Conrad's office, and they'll connect you, or I'd like to talk to, you know, so-and-so. And the White House has a separate number, and I'm sorry I'm not in my home studio. I don't have the first three digits right in front of me. It's a 202 number, and it ends in 1111.
Yeah, and it's very hard to get through. That's the one that comes up with the code. They say SW90T, SW90T. I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either,
yeah,
Sylvia.
But I know you have, you need, I mean, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I want to thank you from my whole family
you're welcome.
Job that you're doing and the effort that you're putting into this.
Thank you, Sylvia.
And
one last thing is you may be having a problem getting through because you have call blocking. And if you have call blocking, your phone company can tell you, and thank you for the call, Sylvia, your phone company can tell you how to unblock it. I think it's like *86 or something that unblocks it for one particular call. So, you know, check it out. Kyle in San Rafael. Hey, Kyle, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A quick note before I get to my point. The note is that a great deal of energy is being directed towards Green 960, who has, as I'm sure you know, demoted you.
Kyle, I'm sorry. I'm dumping that. Thanks for the call, though. Ben in Aloha, Oregon. Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I believe that we could get the money for health care, and we could do a lot for this country just by cutting back on that war. I'm focused on that war in Iraq, but there's the Afghanistan also.
Mm-hmm.
We've got that big embassy for no purpose that I can see. I wish somebody would explain that.
Well,
we
spent $1 billion building the largest embassy in the world in Iraq because it's right in the middle of the oil patch, Ben. And it's an oil patch where this week the U.S. oil companies are in there bidding. They're selling the oil leases this week, right now.
I feel like it's a monument to George Bush's ego.
Well, there's that too.
They're going to have a hard time staffing it. It's going to be expensive, and it'll be a thorn in any terrorist or someone who has been abused there in Iraq.
Oh, it's a terrible symbol of us.
It's unspeakable.
Yeah, it really is. And
people can call their congressmen like you've told them to, but they've got to do it, and they need to speak out about that too.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it really is important that we. This is what we had this conversation with, and Ben, thanks for the call, and thanks for your great work, by the way, having the peace vigil every single Wednesday out there at Southwest 4th and Hall in Portland or in Beaverton. It's just great what Ben is doing. Coming up next, we have a Member of the Day winner, and it has to do with avatars. Strange happenings in the topics blogs today. Hey, go leave me a message there. I read them every day. Check it out. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to our executive producer Sean Taylor, to Jacob Dean, to Mike Oakes, Chris Weiss, and Kurt Brown, our engineering support, Alva Goldbrook, and Sean Couples for video production, to our webmaster, George Vassilopoulos, to Ron Hartenbaum at WID, to everyone at Dial Global, Amy, Jessica, Ramona, Deborah, Donna, to Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to all of you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. And speaking of Sean Taylor, Sean, we have a member of the day.
Yes, we do, Tom. And let me just say first that, yes, you can have an avatar on our front page blog. All you have to do is check it out at TomHartmann.com. And today's winner is MS Taggerly, who says, cool, I just went to Gravatar.com to add an avatar to accompany my posts here. Then I came back to do a test post to see if it worked and discovered that I didn't even need to. My prior posts already display the avatar that I added. Ain't it swell when things work out better than you expect?
So you too can have an avatar. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Tom.
And what are we giving to our member of the day?
Let's give away the 11th hour.
Okay, the DVD by Leonardo DiCaprio and starring a whole bunch of cool people, including me. Cool. Great. We'll do it. Jeff in Denver. Quick question, Jeff, and then we've got Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News.
Yeah. Given that most things actually with Obama and such have not gotten back to even as good as in the Clinton administration, I unfortunately think we need to ask the question we asked Tom Tancredo.
Back and 5 years ago, you mean?
Yeah. And that's what legislation have you passed that favors the people over the corporations?
Yeah, and now it's a question asked the Democrats as well as the Republicans.
Yeah, the entire party, because for the most part, they're favoring the corporations over us and over and over again.
Yeah, please name one piece of legislation. And that was the question we asked Tom Tancredo. It must have been about 6 years ago, actually, because we ran that contest for 2 or 3 years. He was unable to answer the question, and nobody ever won that prize. And the question was, can you please name, sir, one piece of legislation that the Republicans have sponsored in the House of Representatives of the Senate that became law that worked to the benefit of the people rather than to the benefit of corporations? And Tom Tancredo, at that time, the congressman from Colorado, was unable to answer the question, and we never did get an answer. And I'd say probably to this day, with regard to the Republicans, there's never been an answer. And with regard to the Democrats, you're absolutely right. We need to start asking that question. Jeff, thank you so much. Great to hear from you. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria, what's going on in the world today?
Well, a couple of things going on. Actually, I've got a lot of things going on. Very briefly, we've been waiting for the White House to put out a statement on Michael Jackson's death. It was rumored that there would be something coming out. Well, Robert Gibbs was asked about it this afternoon, said that the president has said that Jackson was a spectacular performer, a music icon. Everyone remembers watching the moonwalk. However, there were aspects to his life that were sad and tragic, and he sent his condolences to the family and fans. But he was pressed on why there wasn't a written statement, and he got a little bit snarky about it, basically, and said that this was what they were going to say, and that this was the way it was going to be done, and that they had said they were not going to put out a written statement. The point was made that Schwarzenegger's put out a written statement, Mandela has made a statement, why not Obama? And he said that this was the way that they were going to do it.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I can see Schwarzenegger. California is the center of the entertainment industry, and Michael Jackson was one of the giants of the entertainment industry. I can see Mandela at a stretch. Michael Jackson was very active for a number of years in African charities, for lack of a better phrase, particularly some of the anti-AIDS work in Africa. Whether the President of the United States should be commenting on the passing of basically an entertainer, or is Michael Jackson more than just an entertainer?
Well,
I guess that's the question.
I think the point was made that he's more than an entertainer. He was also an African-American entertainer who broke the color bar to some extent, and he also did things for the Democratic Party.
Interesting.
So it was an interesting question. But anyway, that's what has been said. Meantime, going back to the climate change bill, the Republicans got very upset this morning about the effort to hold a vote today, which will happen about 5 o'clock. The Democrats filed an amendment shortly after 3 a.m. that was more than 300 pages long. Indiana Representative Mike Pence saying it's a travesty, saying this is not Congress. I don't know what this is, he said. Texas Representative Joe Barton, the ranking Republican on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, said the amendments that contain so many new provisions that have never been seen or reviewed by any hearing or debate, saying the bill needs to be pulled today, basically saying, nobody's read it. We can't vote on this. Nobody's read this thing. So that's what the Republicans are saying about the climate change bill that will be voted on later this day.
So it's going to be voted on no matter what, and most of the Republicans are what, just going to vote no?
They will vote no. It's very, very close at the moment. They had a test vote earlier today, which was 217-205. So it's still a squeaker. I mean, it still could go either way.
Yeah.
And as you know, Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth both oppose it.
Yeah, I'm very ambivalent about it. There are some good Greenpeace-type groups, some green groups who are advocates of this bill. There are others who are opponents of it. The problem is, you know, the good news is that it begins the process of cap and trade. The bad news is that it does it in a very, very weak fashion. And it's probably going to be more of a boon to Wall Street than anybody else, because it's going to create a whole new form of tradable commodity. That would be in the carbon credits. It's going to open a whole new market on Wall Street, but I'm not sure it's going to do that much to reduce carbon emissions.
Exactly, and that's one of the reasons, particularly why Friends of the Earth are opposing it.
Right. Go ahead.
There's a new study out by the Center for American Progress today finding that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, basically saying that there's been more than 13,000 troops dismissed since it was enacted 16 years ago, and at least 1,000 of them held critical occupations, including interpreters and engineers.
Yeah, this is not only morally wrong, it's stupid. We'll just leave it at that. Victoria Jones, don't tell Chris what I'm talking about. Victoria Jones, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work. Coming up Monday on the Tom Hartman program, I'll confront Peter Ferrara, the general counsel of the American Civil Rights Union. That's not the ACLU. This is the right-wing version, who claims the CIA torture memos did not contain approval for torturing detainees. Right. Plus, Doug Cunningham of Workers Independent News will be up here with all the stuff on labor update. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.